Have a new 25, House Bill 141, House Bill 191, House Bill 186, and House Bill 129. Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The House. Representative Lindholm, we're in Committee of the Whole. All right, the Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 125. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 125, introduced by Representative Obermueller. Wyoming Lottery Revenues, an act relating to the Wyoming Lottery. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Connolly, Dayton, Furphy, Hallinan, Kenner, Madden, Obermueller, and Paxson. Noes, Representative Larson. Signed, Representative Madden, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 125 do pass, and to provide the explanation, the sponsor from House District 56 is ready to appear.
Representative Obermueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a backstory to this bill. Sensing that there won't be any great pushback, I'm going to skip the backstory and just get to the meat of it. This bill clarifies the meaning of the words maximize revenue, which appears in the lottery statute. You'll find the language on page 2, line 4 on the bill before you. On page 2, lines 4 and 5, the bill adds the following words, including revenues to the state and its counties, cities, and towns. This same language is populated in other sections of the statute where applicable. Implicit language is converted to explicit language to eliminate confusion and prepare this statute, hopefully, for an interim study on the statute taken as a whole. I ask for your affirmative vote.
Is there any other discussion? Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Over the last number of years, we have talked a lot about the lottery in different ways. Now we're talking about maximizing revenue, and that's a fairly broad statement. So now it looks like to maximize revenue, we're going to have to talk about some sort of study or the ability to study this out. I don't truly understand the meaning of this bill if it's looking to maximize revenue. Could someone explain that a little further?
Representative Obermueller. Nope. Chairman's monitor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This phrase is used other places in the original lottery bill, and it is a little amorphous, but I think it provides some good direction to the board that oversees the lottery that the legislature is serious about getting some more revenues, and I do believe you will see an interim study on this topic, and this would help guide our path.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that House Bill 125 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 125 has passed the Committee of the Whole. All right. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 141. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 141, introduced by Representative Laux. Concealed weapons in places of worship, an act relating to weapons. Mr. Chairman, your committee number one, this bill was referred to committee number one, Judiciary, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators. Representatives Beitman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Pannell, Salazar, Stith, and Winters. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Kirkbride?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 141 do pass, and will be explained by our colleague from House District 59.
Representative Laux.
Mr. Part-time Chairman, Vice Chairman, is that correct? Okay. Thank you very much. And I apologize, you guys. I'm really struggling with my voice the last few days, and I've had a couple people say they can't understand what I'm saying, so I apologize for that. So with great pleasure, I bring you House Bill 141. And first of all, in your box, there's a letter that copies. It's labeled HB 141 from a pastor that pastors a few churches but is speaking on his own behalf in this letter supporting the bill. So HB 141 does one simple thing. It removes Romanet 8 under section under 68104T. And what Romanet 8 says is, quite frankly, it says, no person authorized to carry a concealed weapon is allowed to carry in any place where persons are assembled for public worship without the written consent of the chief administrator of that place. In section T under that, what it does, it lists 11 places that law-abiding citizens cannot carry a concealed weapon into. And 9 of these 11 places are all public facilities, which makes sense because that's what the state should be overseeing. And so when I'm talking about public facilities, I'm saying it mentions that you can't bring a gun into jails, courtrooms, any federal buildings, courts, schools, universities, or anywhere else that a governmental meeting is being held. And these buildings are all, excuse me. Okay. And so what I'm trying to point out is that a church building is private property. Okay, and that's the key thing here. We really don't have any business regulating private property. So what HB 141 does is it allows churches or private property owners to establish their own policies as to weapons on their property, just as the law allows any private property owner to do the same, such as businesses, retail businesses, oil companies, even mine sites. It's all private property. So they can have their own policies. They can post that no guns are allowed, or they can post their policy or allow concealed to be carried. So what we want to do is let's let the churches craft their own policies. They can say they do not allow the weapons, or they can say they do, or they can say their board has established a security team and only their team is allowed to carry. Okay. Many churches right now, in fact, the church that I go to, they know there's people carrying in church, but it's against the law. But they will not, they don't want to go to where they're giving an authorization or a signature because it creates other problems for them. So this bill fixes this problem. And I can keep going. I got 6 or 7 pages of this, so I'm trying to get a feel for this. We're all trying to, there's 31 other bills after this one we want to look at. So give me any hints if you want me to shut up.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, this is a very good bill, and there's been a lot of input from individuals across the state. There are liability issues at times if you're going to try to have people sign a waiver, or you provide an opportunity for someone to do that. There's some question about how that will work for insurance. And so this bill actually fixes a real problem. And so I think it's very good. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Kirkbride's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 141 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 141 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for
Mr. Chairman.
Pardon me. Chairman Kirkbride. Or Chairman Majority Floor Leader Miller.
Sorry for the interruption, Mr. Chairman. Just a, we've gone through a lot of general file bills. Technically, tomorrow is second reading, and you can bring second reading amendments, but we have to get through third reading of the budget bill tomorrow. So I would encourage you to think seriously about, instead of bringing a second reading amendment, think about a third reading amendment next Tuesday on whatever bill you want to amend here. There's other things we can do. If you still want to bring a second reading amendment, that's fine. But, you know, if you can refrain, that hopefully will speed up the process a little bit.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 191. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 191, introduced by Representative Northrup. Termination of parental rights, child support obligation, an act relating to termination of parental rights. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Representatives Beitman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Pannell, Salazar, Stith, and Winters. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 191 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the standing committee amendments to present both the bill and the amendment, the good chairman, from 50.
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me start off with House Standing Amendment Number 1. Turn to page 2 of the bill, and after Romanet VI, it starts out with a clear statement of the effect of the order of termination regarding the legal rights, privileges, and support obligation of the parent in accordance with Wyoming statute. And so that's how they amended it. They actually inserted a clear statement, which is what we're looking for. Actually, one of the members of the committee actually used the term, it's a warning label to parents when you do a voluntary separation. And so they want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. So we're going to have a clear statement. Next, we're talking about what rights you're giving up. You're giving up your legal rights, your privileges, and support obligation of the parents. But if the court decrees it, you still have to have any of those. I mean, you can't just give it up because you signed a piece of paper. All right, and then down on line 9, it's exactly the same thing, in the same manner, and that's what this does. If you voluntarily give away the rights to your kids, you're willing to sign that away, the court still says you have obligations, like child support, to pay. That's the bill. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Questioning being called. All those in favor of Chairman Kirkbride's motion, when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 191 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 191 is passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration. Oh, yep, time out. Sorry, guys. We're going to have to back up. There's a standing committee amendment on that. The standing committee amendment still needs to be voted on, and that's standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 191. Question being called. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. All those opposed, say no. Standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. Now we're back on the bill. Is there any other discussion? Question being called on House Bill 191. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. All those opposed, no. House Bill 191 has passed committee of the whole. My apologies about that. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 186. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 186, introduced by Representative Harshman. SIPA guarantee, an act relating to public funds. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You looking for the bill?
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Nicholas?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I would do so if I recommend that House Bill 186 do pass, and I further move that the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I can explain the amendment real quick, Mr. Chairman. It's a two grammatical changes. Page 2, line 21, we delete purposes and insert priority. Page 3, line 7, delete reminder and insert remainder. So I'd ask for a vote on the amendment.
Any discussion? Question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. All those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. Back on the bill, Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will turn the explanation of the bill over to the good Speaker of the House.
Speaker Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I think a handout just hit your box. Now, we can have, I think our rules state that you can have 3 color handouts per session. I think this is the first one in 16 years I've ever used. Thought about making this middle part where I think that's green. I thought about leaving that open white, and then this thing would be red, white, and blue. But okay. Now, I talked to several of you. The previous, when I did this on introduction, it had the SIPA, the colored box, is that red, green, and blue, had 3 boxes underneath it. And we all look at the world differently. And I thought, well, yeah, that's just subdividing the SIPA. And some of you referenced to me, you said, in fact, many of you said, why are you adding more boxes, more buckets? And I go, I'm not. I'm just subdividing this current one. Well, that's not what that picture shows. And so then I started looking at that picture, and I was like, absolutely right. And so I asked our staff if they could just actually subdivide the SIPA. That's what we're doing. We're just dividing it into 3. And so I think this is really accurate. Picture's worth 1,000 words. I think this picture might be worth 2,000 words. So I'll try to keep it brief so not as many bills die in the process. So I think we're going to be all right with bill death, though, on another note. We're moving along. Members, what this is, and I talked about it on the introduction, basically it adds another line, another dotted line where you see the yellow guaranteed approximately 75% of the annual SIPA. So again, if you follow the permanent mill trust fund corpus through the next box moving from top to bottom where it says PWMTF investment earnings, interest, dividends, realized capital gains. Then you follow down the next little box off to the left. It says spending policy amount. This bill would go into effect in the next biennium. The current spending policy, meaning the amount we'll spend off our investment earnings, is 5%. That's the current law, and it's been that way for probably since 2004. When those folks kind of in that era, over in the late 90s, instituted this trust flow system, really, because we used to spend every nickel that came out of the permanent mill trust fund. That's why it never really grew much. And that was instituted in the late 90s. That spending policy was like 13%. And then, because we used to spend every nickel. And then there was a step down, and then coal bed methane hit, and the boom was on, and we quickly dropped it to 5%. And then we never really even recognized it after that. We saved almost all of it because we didn't need to spend it, and we saved it. So 4x10, went from 2 to 4, 4 to 8, right? And so that was a beautiful thing. It was a good thing we did. And so that spending policy has been at 5%. And to be even more conservative moving forward, in House Bill 5 last year, we are starting the step down of the spending policy. So in 2 years, you can see in that box, it goes to 4.75, and then in fiscal year 22 and thereafter, it will be 4.5. So we're gonna ask less performance, really, out of these funds to guarantee this revenue. Okay, so then it goes to the general fund. So this current 5% spending policy, currently the general fund is 2.5% of that. You can see the dollar amount in fiscal year 21 is just under $200 million. And then it's the 5% spending policy is divided in 3 ways. The general fund gets half of it at 2.5%, and then you see those 2 solid arrows that come after that. One goes to the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account. That's the refueling mechanism. So we have a mechanism to refuel the LSRA. And you can see that amount is almost $100 million. All right? And that is currently 1.25% of the total 5%. And then that box right next to it that is currently colored, right, with three colors, is the SIPA. And that is 1.25%. And what we did when we did this, I don't know, 6 years ago, was really put into statute what we did during all the boom years. We saved about a big chunk. We invested in infrastructure in a big chunk. And then we put some in the permanent mineral, a big portion in the permanent mineral trust fund. So this really tried to mimic that and get it into our permanent flow. So you have 2.5 in the general fund, 1.25 and 1.25 to make up the other 2.5. So the total is 5% spending policy. I know this stuff. I'm getting prompts from the back row to hold this up and actually point. I won't do that. But as this spending policy goes from 5% down to 4.5%, the general fund will stay at 2.5%. So the question is, what's going to happen to the other two boxes? They're going to go from 1.25 down to 1. 1 plus 1 plus 2.5 equals 4.5. So we're going to shrink the size of the SIPA and the LSRA refuel in terms of percentage. But the reason we stepped it down over time is because the corpus of the fund keeps getting bigger. And the 5-year rolling average keeps getting bigger. So that means the spending policy in dollar amounts is going to stay pretty constant because it just gradually keeps ticking up. 3, 4, 5 million a year in these accounts, it'll flatline for a couple of years as we step down. Tried to keep those dollars real similar for our appropriations committee, for us, the legislature, to appropriate these services. And then it'll start taking off again as the corpus keeps growing past $8 billion and so on. And so and this growth of the corpus really is this 1.5% constitutional severance tax, been in place since 1974. And it's generally 150, pending to $300 million a year out of that constitutional severance. That's going to just continue to grow the corpus. So this bill adds another line, and it's this line that goes from the reserve account to the SIPA account. And this is the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund Reserve account. And that is set at 150% of the spending policy. The spending policy then is about $400 million right now, and this reserve account is capped at $550 million. And so this is really the key to this whole thing. If you look in this general fund box and you see 2.5%, $195 million, and then you look under that, fiscal year 21 CREG, that's Consensus Revenue Estimating Group, 2.15%. That's already on the goldenrod, because that's what we get every year, and we've gotten that for 40 years since we've been doing this. That's dividends and interest, and that's what CREG profiles. Dividends and interest, really safe, consistent, cash kind of interest investments. So this reserve account, in effect, is guaranteeing that difference between CREG and the 2.5. And that, you look at that, that's about $15 million, $15.5 million. So we're going to have a reserve account of $500 million to guarantee $15.5 million. 35 years plus guarantee. It's a little bit overkill. Now, I hear you. Question. So the question is, we want to draw this arrow down here and guarantee just 75% of the SIPA. And this proposes to subdivide the SIPA with 45% of it to the school major maintenance CapCon account. Got to find a way to solve this problem and pay for it instead of raising taxes. And you're not going to cut it to zero. I mean, you're just going to say, I don't know what any, I'm looking for solutions, folks. And then the other part is to guarantee that green part, 30%, for legislative priorities. Our Capcom bill is a smidgen compared to what it was 6 years ago, but it's not zero. I doubt that it'll ever be zero, right? It hasn't been zero since statehood in 1890, okay? And so to guarantee, you see the yellow box, 0.75 or 75% of the annual SIPA that goes back and forth as reserve account. And then if you read in the orange, this is really where this is coming to the head. In fiscal year 22 and thereafter, the guarantee will be 0.75%. That's that where that yellow box is pointing, of the SIPA. Plus the difference between 2.5 and the interest and dividends. These interest and dividends are projected to be 2.15, meaning the guarantee would be around 1.1% or $88 million a year. So we're going to have $556 million to guarantee $88 million, about 6 years of guarantee. We generally don't meet our spending policy maybe once out of every 10 years, maybe on average twice out of 15 years. I mean, it's a diversified portfolio. And it's really stable. It's, again, oil, gas, coal, all that. And I'm saying we ought to have this honest-to-goodness acknowledgement with our people that we've saved their money, and now we better put it to work. And don't deny that it exists, and we have the most conservative plan in the world to guarantee it. And I guess if it all goes to zero, and it goes to zero over, you know, for years and years and years in the United States, I think we're going to have bigger problems than this. And so I don't think anybody can budget or plan or Craig estimating group on the sun not coming up. And I just, so with that, I'd love to, if you have specific questions about the bill, I'd love to answer any question. And quit talking, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question, this is a good bill. That's why I'm a co-sponsor. But I think it's so good that it should be able to be used in our budget this year. But instead, we've got a budget amendment that came that alters it a little bit, and I don't know if it's a fair question to be talking about why it's different this year than it's going to be the next biennium, or, and if it is, you can privately explain it to me, but I think it's important for the other 58 people to understand it too.
Go ahead, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. And the budget amendment that we adopted yesterday is, it's not identical because it can't quite be identical because this is going to be 2 years before this rolls out, but it's the same principle. It's the exact same principle. The JC position was to guarantee 90% of the first year, and the amendment that we adopted did exactly this, 75% of both years, and then subdivided it just like the colored box in the SIP is. So it's not identical to this bill. Part of it's cash flow because we're going to need this cash flow July 1. These investments won't all roll in on July 1. That's going to be on the previous fiscal year. So that's part of it. So I hope I answered that, and we can certainly talk some more. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Vice Chairman Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a couple of questions, and one of them is, why, we do have a lot of problems to solve, and we're all here to do that. And so I'm just wondering, why not the LISRA to be transferred to where we need it? Why did we pick the SIPA? And how many more new schools do we actually need in our state? We've done a lot of building, so I would like to know that. And we do have more than one problem. We talked about the DD waivers yesterday and all of those things as well. So I really appreciate your work on this, and I appreciate you offering us solutions. Just need to understand a little more.
Speaker Harshman.
Thank you, and I really appreciate that question. The whole And it's really what we're doing on the common school side. And the budget moves, and House Bill 140 does this. It moves savings to savings. And we fill up this reserve account. And the key thing is, why not use our LSRA? Because we don't have to. And we're only going to have to actually spend cash out of the reserve account maybe 2 out of 15 years, if past history is any indication. So why blow our cash right out the door and then wait till this comes back in? And then I think the other part of this, by segregating this and saying, I think it prevents a little bit of the land rush on the SIPA that's been going on the last 4 years. Because people say, hey, if this investment comes in, I want my first dibbies on that deal. And I think this, it lines out these priorities of the state that we have. And your second question about how many more new schools. If you look at this year's school capital construction budget, I don't think there's many new schools in there. Most of this is major maintenance of what we currently have on the ground. And then some component projects. These small schools, when they lose a heating system or a boiler or something big, they just don't have the major maintenance to do it. And so we've, over the years, we have what's called this component system, and we take care of these projects for these little districts that just can't, there's not enough major maintenance to do it. And so I think everybody's recognized that. I think the Select School Facilities Committee, Appropriations, we're in a different era with school CapCon now. We have done a tremendous amount, about $2.5 billion in Coley's bonus, about $1 billion in federal mineral royalties, and we've rebuilt most of the infrastructure. It'll last for decades. And so the major maintenance plan really is a 50-year plan to kind of just preserve what we got. And so I think most of this is major maintenance. I think it all really is. $45 million a year is only about half of the major maintenance bill. So thank you for the question.
Representative Lone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do want to start by saying thank you to the bringer of this illustration. He actually pulled me aside and talked about it, and the first revision of this I saw made it look pretty terrible, that we're just going to be throwing money many different directions. And I was a very staunch no on how we had it set up. So I do appreciate the changes and the better understanding of what's being provided here. And it does do a lot to understand where our money is and how it can be best utilized. I do just have one quick question about the use of the SIPA on part number 3, the 25% remainder determined by the legislature. Are there any sideboards on how that money can be utilized, or is it free game for anything? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And those monies would not be in that dotted line guarantee. That's the 25% that's not guaranteed. So those would have to come in and be realized earnings before they're appropriated. So that's a good question, but the legislative body, 31 votes and 16 down there and a signature, will determine what those priorities are. But generally, we've tried to say strategic investments and projects that are always going to be in front of the state, right? So thank you for the question.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And there's one question I have for the speaker, and that is on this diagram that we have, it shows the reserve account to have $556 million in it, and yet on the goldenrod, it shows $131 million. So what's the explanation for that?
Speaker Harshman?
Actually, it's $260 million in that account. It's not the common school reserve account. It's the that permanent mineral trust fund reserve account. Right now, it's $260 million cash. And projections are there's going to be another $90 million on July 1st to take that to $350. And then I actually have a small little budget amendment, give you a preview for tomorrow, that would add another $40 million, moving savings to savings, to move that to $400 million. And so that's where I'm hoping this will be July 1st. That'd be over a four-year guarantee why this thing just keeps on growing. So I think, and I'll be glad to look at your goldenrod with you, but that number I think is $260 million is currently cash in that account right now, in the reserve account.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Speaker, it shows the 17-18 PWMTF spending policy reserve account to have about $260 million. But the 2019 to 2020, it shows under only $131 million. So that's where my question comes in.
Ready, Chairman?
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. I appreciate the question, the clarification. And that is on the goldenrod because the Joint Appropriations Committee budget guarantees 90 million or 90% of that first year. And so that is exactly that goldenrod taking that 90% of the first year of SIPA as if we get zero investment. So that's right. That's why you have the cash guarantee. That's exactly right. But the account has $260 million. On the goldenrod, it moves right now on JSC, it moves 90. Really, under this proposal, it'll do kind of the same thing over the biennium because it's going to profile $90 million in cash out of this account, right, and to guarantee that investment income. And that starts on July 1st of the biennium, and then it's 2 years of investment earnings then to fill all that. And so that's the accounting of it. So I'm glad you asked that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure doesn't look like it. Well, I'd rather Representative Summers, do you have a question? Didn't think so. Go ahead, Representative Gray.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I got a couple comments on this and sort of framed as a question as well. And I talked about this on the introduction vote. And my issue is this in the SIPA, this 55%, this 30% on priority two, and then the 25% in the remainder. And, you know, thinking about this as a conservative, I always go back to my core principles, things that I really believe in. I always believe in you focus on your core. And when you think about our core insolvency, there's three issues there. You got the general fund, which of the three is probably the lowest. Then you have the school capital construction, which of course is the major maintenance thrown in there. And the third one is the big question, which is the school foundation program, that operating budget. And what's missing here in this graph is a discussion of the school foundation program, which we know we've seen those slides. That's the big contributor. To the shortfall. And so as a person that believes in contributing to our core, to hold 55% for something outside of our core insolvency, I think that's where the issue I have is. Got to focus on that core insolvency, filling that gap. And every dollar we're diverting, we've got to be thinking, is it in one of those three accounts and helping us to plug one of those three accounts? When you have 55%, that's a lot there that isn't going to one of those three things. And so that's sort of my comment. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Okay, and I would just address that comment with a comment. I would gently push back against my colleague from the Oil City. There might be some governments that are insolvent. The great state of Wyoming is far from insolvent. We have zero debt. We have billions in trust funds, billions in cash. And so I don't want that to go out on the airwaves and people think the state of Wyoming is insolvent. Are you kidding me? We're the envy of the nation. Nobody has savings like we do and a backup like us. So I don't want us to leave on a Thursday night with that word, because words matter. So let's talk about the core issues. School foundation, school CapCon, general fund. These are all issues that are part of what is the state guarantee or the state issue. You can call them different things, but if you want to look at that green box and that red box and say, it's really general fund. But by the vote of you, you can direct it anywhere you want. Just like legislators in the 90s sent twice the percentage of general fund into the school foundation program. They just made the move. They moved water accounts. They moved highway accounts. They moved all this. And so that's what elected representatives will do to solve problems. We're going to appropriate and have a balanced budget. So I think, you know, that's fine. If you wanted to say 30% of that goes to the school foundation, I mean, that would be our choice. But I just don't think it matters. If you strategic investments projects, I was trying to solve one part of this problem. There's another bill, and that's going to help solve some more of the problems we've got in the school foundation. And I keep saying this, so this is the pie of everything in Wyoming, right? That the state has a part of. I'm not talking about your local cities and counties, but this is the pie. And our job then is going to be, how do we divide this up? And I keep saying this over and over. If you look at the size of this pie, and we're still operating off the, we really only have severance tax, federal mineral royalties, and our biggest by far is sales tax. That's our biggest number one deal. I mean, I know we sometimes say minerals pay 70% of the bills. Really, they pay about 50%, 55. And if you count legacy minerals, which these trust funds are, yeah, you're over 60, 65%. But as you look at all this pie, basically this thing is divided in the late 80s and early 90s. And that's all I'm saying. I think we're going to have to examine that. And that's not all in this bill. I'm just trying to free up what is basically a half-cent sales tax for us, because I don't think we're going to cut it, and I don't think we're going to tax it. And I think before we even do all those, we've already cut a third of a billion. We better have this honest-to-goodness conversation about a real revenue stream. This isn't pretend money. This is the most conservative trust fund in the world. And so that's why I'm bringing it. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to clarify one thing here before getting back. I mean, when I use the word, I use shortfall and solve and see interchangeably. So, you know, we've seen in these slides the word shortfall. To me, business perspective, that's the same as an insolvency. I did not use the word insolvent, which would be a different word. So I said insolvency, not insolvent. Thank you.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I actually agree in part, not with the last thing said, with our good new representative from District 57. In fact, I've had these kind of conversations with the Speaker over the years. And I can't believe it, but Mr. Speaker, I'm going to kind of quote conversations that we've had over the years in response. It's the will of the legislative body, in order to appropriate the funds out of these coffee cans that we've established. It really is our duty. It's why I'm up here often and, for example, talking about the state pen account. I'm watching that. I'll always watch that. Right? Just because we put money in there, it is our obligation to watch it and then appropriate it. It's our duty. And I hope that each and every one of us watches these accounts, and that's why we're spending this much time going over it, because it is our duty. What we're doing in this bill right here, I think, is honestly, a pretty brilliant solution to looking at the issue regarding school capital construction. Right? It takes care of other things, but we came into this session knowing that we no longer had coal lease bonuses that we were flush with, tens if not hundreds of millions of dollars that have funded school capital construction down to zero. What we have now with this proposal is a very prudent way to have money available for capital construction and major maintenance that we, again, as a body, will be obligated to take a look at each and every year before we appropriate and expend from it. So I think that your general question was correct. I think that this is an excellent solution. So I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Speaker Harshman. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just responding a little bit to that. And I like some of the school capital construction discussion in here. But, again, where my issue comes about, some of the discussions I hope to have moving forward is on that 55% that remains in SIPA. That's where my concern is. And those dollars, if they're not going to one of our three core insolvencies, I have an issue with that. And when you have a bill that has some parts that are good and some parts that are bad, you know, that's always part of the thinking that you have to go as you go through these bills. So thank you very much.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 186 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 186 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 129. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 129, introduced by Representative Kirkbride. Glider Kit Vehicles, Title and Registration, an act relating to motor vehicles. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Representative Byrd, Claussen, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, and Lauck. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Greer?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises report to do so, the recommendation that House Bill 129 do pass. And I would also move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 129. And I'll go ahead and try to explain the amendment. So, folks, I think this is best done if we get the amendment approved, push forward, and then the good sponsor of the bill can walk you through it. What we did in committee with the cooperation of the sponsor and a couple of constituents that were there to testify is did a little bit of cleanup. And what you're going to find, and I think this is probably the most significant component of this, is on page 2, line 1, we had this. Now, these are titles to, I'm just going to use the term refurbished semi-trucks, okay? And this is an issue over valuation with them. And they'll have a branded title. And when we say a branded title, it'll be crystal clear to the next purchaser in line that these are what's called a glider kit. So that's the most significant component of it. The next one on this is line 3, or page 3, line 20, again, is a cleanup. Page 4, line 18, this was, the grammar was poor. And it took, well, you, Mr. Chair, quite a while to get that one figured out. Anyhow, moving through this then, the rest of these were cleanups until you get to the inserted language, which is just where we took where the sponsor had come back in to make this flow a little better for it. So with that, if you want me to go any further, I will, but I just call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Question being called on the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 129. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 is passed to House Bill 129. Back on the bill, Chairman Greer.
Yes, and Mr. Chairman, I'll turn the explanation over to the good Chair of Judiciary.
Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as has been noted, we're in the world of big trucks here for a few moments tonight. Glider kits refer to when you buy a kit that might consist of a frame, a cab, wiring instruments, fenders, hood, front axles, and wheels, And it is traditionally meant then maybe you took some still good parts from a wrecked vehicle and added them to the kit and created a like new vehicle. You might add a transmission or an engine typically or a rear axle, wheel, and tire package. So that's what it traditionally meant. And the problem became that when you went in to title this glider kit, or sometimes referred to as an assembled vehicle, the titling statute was vague, and so they'd title your vehicle as the oldest component. So in the folks I worked with and also another family over the hill that work in this realm, they had like new vehicles, 2017 vehicles with a one case of 2003 part, and it got titled as a 2003, and their banker was not amused. In another case, they had a like new $460,000 wrecker that had been assembled in this manner, but because the wrecker component was older, it was devalued down to about an $80,000 vehicle, and that's the problem we're trying to fix. So here's how we fixed it, we fixed it both for these kits that are where you buy all the assembled parts, or the kits where you buy part of the truck and then add some of your own parts from the pile of materials out behind the shop. So probably the punchline of this whole bill occurs on page 4 in line 17 through 19. And in that line, we're going to begin to title these by what they look like. So if they look like a 2017, they're going to be titled like a 2017. Then there was problem with the VIN. The state was adding a VIN with an additional number that was different from the manufacturer suggested VIN. So from now on, it'll be that one that's stamped on the frame. This is described on page 5 in lines 6 through 13, subsection E. And then we're going to add the capacity for a trucker that had one of these, you know, older VINs put on the title. They can go back and get it retitled under this statute, and that process is described subsection C on page 4, line 12. In the process of all this, I think we'll bring some uniformity to how the clerks do this all around the state, and that branded title component that the good chairman referred to is important because it'll keep a subsequent buyer from buying a truck that looks new but has some old parts from being unaware that he needs to check this out because it contains some old parts. So we solved a real problem for real people here, and I urge your support.
Is there any other discussion? Chairman, can't think right now.
There we go.
Yeah. Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I forgot the name of my grandchild the other day, so I'm kind of with the speaker and you and others. A question I've got, so I know these things are being done. People are buying brand new, these glider kits, brand new truck. If you've ever tried rebuilding things, you find that after a while, you don't just have an engine and a transmission and major components. You have all the other little things. There are people, trucking outfits, that buy these new ones, completely rebuild the engine, transmission, those major components, stick them into the truck, and then title them pre-2000. These components are before you had to have the ELD requirements that the federal government had and some other things in it, and it gets a truck old enough that they don't have to do that. And so I'm wondering, this bill doesn't seem to do that, but I know it's being done in the state east of us, and I'm wondering if it can be modified to allow the company, the trucking firm, to do it.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Kirkbride.
We talked about that, and that may be a bit of an issue here. There was a representative from the association that grows grain that brought that up. We couldn't figure out a way to allow people to just pick and choose how their vehicle was titled. So we may still be in conversation about that. You do have a good point. I think we've certainly solved the bigger problem here, but admittedly there could be that wrinkle for a farmer who actually wanted to have it titled older, and he may get sucked into this a bit. We'll keep working on that.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Greer's motion that House Bill 129, pardon me, Chairman Greer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 129 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 129 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution Number 2. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Joint Resolution 2, introduced by Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs. Commercial Driver's License Compact Agreement, a joint resolution requesting Congress to enact legislation permitting Western states to enter into a voluntary compact to establish a graduated commercial driver's license program that would allow commercial driver's license between 18 and 21 years of age to operate a commercial motor vehicle in a consenting contiguous state. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Blake, Brown, Court, Crank, Edwards, Eklund, Laux, Piperinen. Signed, Representative Eklund, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Eklund?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it will do so with recommendation that House Joint Resolution 2 do pass. And I further turn the explanation over to my Vice Chair from the Oil City.
Vice Chairman Laux.
Mr. Vice Chair, how are you? Thank you very much. If you listen to the reader of the bill, read the title on it there, this is a resolution, and it's really important. Everybody that I talk to seems to think that, you know, there's going to be less and less truck drivers out there because we've got autonomous vehicles and everything going on, but there's going to be a huge shortage of truck drivers. So all this does is we're losing truck drivers. You know, they can't drive a commercial truck till they're over 21. And with the commercial driver's license and what's going on is they're losing these young people. They're going into other fields, and so we're trying to find a way to offset the projected shortage of truck drivers in the next 15 years. So what we're going to do is hopefully get Congress to enact this so that truck drivers in our surrounding states, that we can get into a compact and we can get 18 to 21-year-olds driving on some limited cases to where they can cross state lines and learn how to be a truck driver. And that's basically all the bill is. And if you have any questions, I'll sure address it. Otherwise, just vote yes on this. Thank you.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just kind of wondering, do you need a commercial driver's license to drive a food truck?
Well, to try to answer the good representative's question, I really don't know. I don't think so. It has to do with axle weights and stuff like that. And the food trucks that I see are basically overgrown pickups. So I believe the answer would be no.
Question being called. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Eklund's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution Number 2 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Joint Resolution Number 2 is passed Committee of the Whole.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
We're going to do some adjustments to the list, so please grab your list, your green sheet. The next bill will be as shown on the list. It's House Bill 3. The following bill, House Bill 24, move it below House Bill 181 on the next page. Continue on down. After House Bill 3, we'll have House Bill 39, House Bill 135, House Bill 55, House Bill 6, and then House Bill 5, move it down below Bill 67 on the next page. And that's all for now.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 3. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 3, introduced by Representative Paxton. County Clerk Map Recording Fees Conforming Amendment, an act relating to county fees. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to your committee, number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Sweeney, Zwanitzer. Noes, Representatives Edwards and Lone. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move in the committee of the whole rises report to do so. The recommendation of House Bill 3 do pass. There is no standing committee amendment. It is the shortest bill of the budget session. I return it over to the good representative from District 47.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative Paxson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is just as it says. It's a county clerk map recording fees conforming amendment. It's a long-standing problem that we are trying to correct. It involves two different statutes. The first one I'm going to list is 183402, which is the statute that requires, that outlines the duties of a county clerk. And among those duties, it lists the collecting of fees on map recordings. And currently, as of House Bill 98 that was passed in 2013, recording fee went from $2 to $5 on a, per corner. But in the meantime, somewhere along the line, we've missed Statute 3329906, which is the one that calls for the preservation of map records for public inspection. And that goes back quite a ways because it's still set at $1. So what this does is just bring these two statutes conform to each other.
Seeing no further discussion and question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that House Bill number 3 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 3 is passed Committee of the Whole. Stand for. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 39. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 39, introduced by Representative Blake, Wildlife Conservation License Plates, an act relating to motor vehicles license plates. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Blake, Brown, Court, Crank, Eklund, and Piperinen. Noes, Representatives Edwards and Lauck. Signed, Representative Eklund, Chairman. This bill was then referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, and Wilson. No, Representative Walters. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Eklund?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it will do so with recommendation that House Bill number 39 do pass, and I turn the explanation over to my my colleague on transportation.
Representative Blake.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 39. And ask for you to vote for this amendment. You know, we decided that if you want this specialty plate, you should pay for it.
Representative Blake.
Yeah.
We'll get a quick timeout. We need those moved by the bill moved by Chairman Eklund, I believe. Pardon me. The Standing Committee amendments need to be moved by Chairman Eklund.
Do you have the amendment? We have just one? Okay. So, sorry about that. And I would further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 39. And there's another amendment, but it was put on by Appropriations. So, do they need to move it or? Okay.
Thank you, Chairman Eklund.
Okay, the bill's been moved, the amendment's been moved, and I'd ask you to vote for this amendment. We decided They want this plate that they should pay a little extra for it. So what we've done in the original bill, it was $100 to buy the plate. And then you wouldn't pay that $100 again until your plate renewal in 7 years. So we added $25 more a year. And I'd stand for any questions. So every year that you go to get your little sticker, it's going to be $25 more. So the initial $100, and then every year you do it, it'll be $25 more. So we'll keep a little bit of money going into this fund. And the second part of that amendment, if you look at your amendment, line 19s, the person who keeps account of all our money, for purposes of accounting and investing only, the account this is going into, the wildlife conservation account, may be treated as a separate account from the state highway fund. We want to keep this account separate from the state highway fund, and so I'd ask for your aye vote on this amendment.
Is there any other discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1? Question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 39. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 is passed to House Bill 39. Chairman Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, when you looked at the revenues that this license plate would bring in and how long it would take to develop any type of a substantial amount for the purpose of these license plates, your good committee said, you know what, they're not charging enough for these things. And so if you look at the Standing Committee, what we have is we're instead of paying $100, we bumped that up to $150. And then on the renewals, we've changed it to $50 each year when you do it. So if those folks are serious about having conservation plates, then let's make sure that that fund develops at a rate that you'll actually have some money to use it for conservation.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I talked to the proponents of this bill, and they were fine on this, so please vote aye.
Any other discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2? Oh, pardon me, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question as to how much raising these fees was ultimately going to bring in total over the course of this period. I know that there was some discussion that this was going to create a bigger account, but maybe a rough idea of what we're looking at a total expenditures here.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did some rough estimate, and I can barely balance my checkbook, but I think I got this straight. There's a website right now of one of these groups that are supporting this bill. They have almost 2,500 people pledged to buy this plate. And so I rounded it off to 2,400 people times 150, $360,000. And then 50 for the registration, 2,400 plates is $120,000. Multiply that by the 7 years. Is $840,000. So every seven-year period, in my rough estimation, is $1.2 million.
Representative Edwards.
I got a question for that. The numbers of people that we're going to pay for the license plates, it originally started out at $100 a plate, where these 2,500 or so people committed to buy it. Do they still commit to buy it with it tripling in the price that it was is going to cost, all of them? Thank you.
Chairman Nicholas.
So two different questions. Number one, we're not tripling it. We're just raising it by 50 bucks. Next, if there was a fiscal note, and this is partly the reason for our calculation, the good representative from the southwest corner of the state was pretty optimistic. The conservation accounts estimated under the original numbers were 10,000 in fiscal year 19, 20,000 in fiscal year 20, and 20,000 in fiscal year 21. And so by the increases that we added to it,
at best you would double those figures. And so it's I wish you were right on those numbers, but I think conservatively we're still kind of slowly moving this up to enough money to actually do a lot of good.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm the internal optimist. That's for sure. The people, when they first brought this plate and read the bill, they didn't quite understand it. They thought they had to pay $100 every year when they renewed. So I'd ask for your favorable consideration on this amendment.
Question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 has passed to House Bill Number 39. Is there any other discussion on House Bill 39? Question being... Whoop. Chairman Madden.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. We have it seems like every year, we have this ordeal where somebody comes in and wants a personalized plate. And I should have recorded my speech. Sometimes the speech works and sometimes it doesn't. Most often it has worked. But my point on this is that we shouldn't be putting our license plates on our cars up for sale as a billboard. They're for really law enforcement tools, the purposes, and they're not a billboard. If you take a look at the creep, or I shouldn't say that, but the proliferation of these license plates, this is an ungulate, right? And we got at least three other ungulates that will be wanting to, representatives of ungulates, that will want to come in with their own personalized plate, maybe one at a time, maybe one next year we'll have, the year after that another one, and pretty soon all our ungulates will be taken care of. And then, of course, we got sage hands. We got, their list goes on, and we're done with that. We can advertise hills and mountains and rocks and parks and stuff like that. And I see a lot of people chuckling about this, but our state to the north, if you look on their website as to how many license plates they have up in the north part or north of us, the last count that I had was 87 of them. 87 different personalized plates. They weren't all ungulates, but there are all kinds of things. And it's just amazing the kind of thing. Every cause you can imagine has got a plate. And there, some are pink, and some are brown, and some are white. And they say that when you go up to the county courthouse and buy your plates, they have them all pictured on the wall. Okay, and they give you one of those laser lights. They say, which one of these do you want? And you're supposed to aim that laser light at the plate of your choice. Now, you think this isn't going to happen. The first one that happened was the first year I was down here. And the arguments against it were almost enough. There was a school over the hill wanted one of these. And you would think that, the arguments were that you get on a famous auction site on the computer, and you can buy old license plates for collectors. Collectors like them. And Wyoming's sale price was about the highest price there was because it had a consistent look to it. This is just going to debase our famous cowboy, and I think that you all should consider this before, if you don't do it tonight and just kill it on first reading, I think you should seriously consider voting no if it unfortunately should make it to third reading. So thank you very much.
Majority Floor Leader Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The good chairman of revenue and I have had this conversation several times, and, you know, frankly, I'm all for getting rid of them all the extra license plates. But the fact is, this horse left the barn a long time ago, so I'm going to support them all. So enough said.
Chairman Barlow.
In support of the Bambi bill, vote aye.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Eklund's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that bill number, House Bill number 39 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Members, please stand still. Thank you, Rep. Summers. All those opposed, please rise. Less than 41. House Bill number 39 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 135. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 135, introduced by Representative Schwartz. Housing Authorities, an act relating to municipalities and counties. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Sweeney, Zwanitzer. Noes, Representatives Blackburn, Edwards, and Lone. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 135 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I will turn over the bill explanation to the only member of the body that was actually at Woodstock.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. So before I start, perhaps I should spend some time talking about that experience.
Please don't.
I do remember it. Question. I sense the body would like me to move on to the actual bill. So this bill does two things. It's really very simple. It's regarding the governance of housing authorities. They exist in many counties. 1510-115A, the change is in the governance. Currently, the line is, authorities are vested with all the powers conferred by this chapter. The change would be, they shall only have the powers conferred as authorized by the governing body. So what that says is, local option. The governing body can determine what the authority has the power to do. That's change one. Change two is in 1510-116. Currently, the way it's written, if one governing body appoints an authority, it can have five members. But for reasons that are lost in the fog of history, if there's two governing bodies, they can only have three. So this bill would change it to give the option for five. So this is local control, local option. I stand for any questions.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Wanitzer's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so that the recommendation, House Bill 135, do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 135 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 55. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 55, introduced by Representative Clem. Property Offenses, an act relating to offenses against property. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass, amended. Ayes, Representatives Biteman, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Stith, and Winters. Noes, Representatives Jennings, Powell, Salazar. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman. This was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. I'm sorry, it returned a committee recommendation that it return without recommendation. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Kirkbride?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 55 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. The discussion of the amendments and also the bill will be by our good colleague from the land of camels and coal in House District 31.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members. Standing Committee amendment has already been moved, and really, you can see it incorporates the whole bill. So what this is property offenses, and as was mentioned in the introduction vote, what this simply seeks to do is it takes the threshold of a dollar amount for what constitutes a felony for certain property offenses, and it moves it up. Okay, so in the original bill, the bill that you have before you, it says $2,500 for most of these property offenses, or for all of these property offenses. And what the good committee sought to do is to really to bring that down to I guess you could say, comparable with what the cost of inflation is. And so the last time these offenses were changed was 14 years ago. If you use the cost of inflation, these offenses right now would be somewhere around the neighborhood of $1,420-some. So the good committee decided to go ahead and change that $2,500 throughout the bill and move that down to $1,500. So in other words, if you look at page one in the bill, page two, we see, page two of the bill is interesting because there's a third degree arson. Third degree arson is a felony. Fourth degree is a misdemeanor. And you'll see that throughout the bill with things. The good committee did decide to change that amount, and this is one that's a little bit different in your standing committee amendment. And it was raised on there to $2,500 from $200, and the good committee decided to lower that down to $500. So instead of $200, it's now going to be $500 with your standing committee amendment. If you look at 63201, and that's on page 3, line number 10, you'll see there that's destruction of property. That's going to be moved from $2,500 in your bill with the standing committee amendment. That's going to be $1,500. With that, if there are no questions, I would call for the question on the standing committee amendment.
Question being called on the standing committee amendment number one. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. All those opposed, say no. Standing committee amendment number one has passed. We're back on the bill. Representative Pinnell, you want to talk about this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're on the bill, you say? You know, well, obviously this bill did come through our committee, and there was a kind of a division in the vote, but we did get a lot of response from the business folks from the state, from the state of Wyoming. The issue is they're not, you know, they don't really concerned about people going to jail. They just want to make sure they get their, their money, get reimbursed for the theft or the loss of property that incurs. And they were firmly against this raise, and I don't blame them. If you look and somebody steals $1,400 worth of merchandise from you, goes across the state line, it's a misdemeanor here, probably a misdemeanor over in the other state, we cannot extradite that individual back. We'll not extradite on a misdemeanor. The other concern I have is that law enforcement also said that, you know, there needs to be a deterrent in the theft and things like that. Because there's gangs that hit some of these department stores, and they make darn sure that the individuals don't go over the felony amount. But combined, they definitely do go over the felony amount. But you can't, you're only charging the one individual. So, and there's other avenues possibly to get them. But the bottom line is that $1,000 is quite a bit of money. It's a lot of money to me, and I know for the businesses, it's a lot of money to them. It's not crumbs, yes. So, with that, I would urge a no vote, and would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a lot of good discussion, and I appreciate my good colleague from our good county. So here's the thing. If you let's take theft for just a moment, because theft was one of those things. Another property offense, by the way, is receiving stolen property. All right. You go to any big box store, and you get a TV. A lot of those TVs now are well over $1,000. Let's say you steal one, and it's $1,100. You're charged with a felony. How about that little device that's in your pocket or on your desk right now? That thing that you answer calls with? Yeah, those things? Over $1,000 now. In fact, there's a company with an apple on it and that fruit, I guess we could say. And you get a new one of those phone, brand new, you're looking over $1,000 for just that device alone. And so all we're saying here with now is amended. Now that these property offenses are at $1,500, all we're saying is we're keeping up with the price of inflation. And by the way, when you consider the states around us, there's four states around us that are higher than what we are right now as far as property offenses. There are two that are the same. And so this isn't any different really than we're doing with our surrounding states. The last thing I would say is this. There was some outcry from some businesses and whatnot, and their concern is restitution. They want to make sure they get restitution. But it's hard to pay restitution if you're sitting in a jail cell or in a prison cell. It's easier to pay restitution if we can go ahead and hit them where it hurts in their pocketbook and they're out working. By the way, part of this bill, too, in page number one, it increases civil liability. And part of that civil liability, you think about it, we want them to hit them where it hurts in the pocketbook. This will have a positive impact on our prison system because we'd be creating less felons and we'd have more misdemeanor offenses. And so this also helps with our prison population as well. So with that, I'd ask you to vote aye.
Representative Pinnell.
Just one more and I'll be brief. Most of these first-time offenders, if it's an individual that gets caught on a felony, $1,000 theft, very seldom go to jail. Very seldom. First-time offense, it probably takes about a third or fourth after they've deferred it and done through other things on it. So very seldom go to jail. So it's not overcrowding the jail. Think of the businessman, the business people that are losing that money and can't get it on restitution. So I'd appreciate a no vote. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Kirkbride's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 55 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 55 has passed Committee of the Whole. Division being called. All those in favor of House Bill 55, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. Less than 38. As I said, House Bill 55 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 6. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 6, introduced by Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, Research and Wildlife Information Confidentiality, an act relating to public records. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee number 6, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Allen, Clem, Flitner, Freeman, Giroux, Haley, Halverson, and McGuire. No, Representative Steinmetz. Signed, Representative Allen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 6 do pass. And for the explanation of the bill, I'll hand it over to the good representative from the Valley of the Stars.
Vice Chairman Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee number 6 is pleased to bring you House Bill number 6, which seeks to exempt certain information from release to the public under the Title 16 Wyoming Public Documents Act. Specifically, the department that manages Wyoming's game, wildlife, and fish wants to keep confidential information that relates to wildlife matters under active research, and especially information it gathers relating to specific wildlife locations. The department desires to protect valuable research data and location information unless its director or its commission decides that the information may be released under a FOIA request, for example. Currently, research projects conducted by a state institution may be kept confidential. This bill only adds research that the department may have contracted to an agency or another person. The department has had to expend precious funds defending in court its reluctance to disclose animal locations and data gathered during research, always successfully. The department releases 99% of the information requested of it. It's only on rare occasions that it does not want to release and has to go to district court and defend its refusal to release, where it has prevailed every time. This bill does not significantly expand existing exemptions found in Title 16. House Bill 6 has widespread support among professionals of the Wyoming press as well as state wildlife advocates. I urge your aye vote. And I'll stand for any questions.
Any discussion on the bill? Any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Chairman Allen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that House Bill 6 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 6 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 122. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 122, introduced by School Finance. Special Educators, Workers' Compensation, an act relating to workers' compensation. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Brown, Flitner, Hunt, Kenner, Northrup, and Paxton. Noes, Representatives Bovee, Freeman, and Piperinen. Signed, Representative Kenner, Acting Chairman. The bill was then re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 122 do pass, and here with the explanation is Representative from House District 20.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, this bill comes out of your School Recalibration Committee, and so during the interim when we were looking for, I guess, efficiencies and ways to save some money, we went back to a statute that was changed a few years ago that really expanded the role of workers' compensation and who was going to be under workers' compensation. And if you kind of look in the bill, it's probably the easiest to explain. And I'm not going to take a lot of time with this, but if you look on page 1, it says this act applies to governmental entities engaged in an industrial classification listed under subsection A of this section and to employees of governmental entities engaged or employed as follows. And so what was always in there was public school educational assistants who provide services to special education students. And those assistants were under this coverage because they were the people that were moving special, you know, kind of these people with disabilities around and had the opportunity to have actually workers' compensation issues. When we expanded the language below, we caught a whole group of people we probably shouldn't have. The Joint Education Committee that has another bill, they have a more refined definition of this to try to capture some of those teachers. This is just kind of a standalone and brings it back to the original language. And just to read quickly from the fiscal note, if you have it, kind of the bottom of the first paragraph, it says historical school district expenditure data indicates that school districts increased expenditures for special education workers' compensation premiums by approximately $3.3 million in fiscal year 2016 as a direct result of this 2015 amendment. So we went a little too far. Is there a chance for amending this? That's fine. We didn't want to lose this bill because this fix is kind of buried in that larger bill out of joint education that deals with a whole lot of issues. And so they've refined that. We didn't do that in this bill. That's the bill, Mr. Chairman. I would stand for questions.
Any questions on the bill? Any questions on 122? Seeing none. All those in favor of Chairman Northrup's motion, the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that House Bill 122 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 122 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next joint resolution for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 5. Reading clerk will read the joint resolution.
House Joint Resolution 5, introduced by Representative Summers. Yellowstone Wildlife Conservation Fee, a joint resolution to the United States Secretary of the Interior and the Director of the National Park Services relating to the imposition of a wildlife conservation fee at Yellowstone National Park. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Representatives Allen, Clem, Flitner, Freeman, Garoux, Haley, Halverson, McGuire, and Steinmetz. Signed, Representative Allen, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Allen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution Number 5 do pass. I also move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and for the explanation on both of these, I'll turn it over to the good representative from the Dale where the pines are.
I do need the amendment.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think I'll dispose with the Standing Committee Amendment. So, Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment is pretty simple. This House Joint Resolution originally just involved Yellowstone National Park. This amendment brings in Grand Teton National Park, its good neighbor. And then if you go on further at the end of, if you go to page 2 of the Standing Committee Amendment, I'm going to walk you through this. So if you go to page 3 of the bill, what they did, and I totally agree with, is if you go in on page 3, line 8, after, page 3, line 9, delete it, I goofed up, Mr. Chairman. I needed to start on page 1 of the, page 1, let's see. Okay, page 3, line 6, Mr. Chairman. Delete this, insert A, and so it would read the imposition of a wildlife conservation fee. And then it goes on after park and inserts Grand Teton National Park. Page 3, line 9, inserts its, deletes its. And then page 4, line 2, before states, insert state of Wyoming. So it just kind of cleans up it just kind of does a cleanup, gets rid of its, and just a cleanup on that, and adds Grand Teton National Park. So I'd call for question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Any discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment? Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Joint Resolution 5, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 passes. We're back on the bill. Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Members of the 64th, I bring you House Joint Resolution 5 and ask for your favorable support. In 2017, there were 4.1 million visitors to Yellowstone National Park. Our nation's first national park is rich in wildlife, which attracts these visitors each year. The wildlife in Yellowstone National Park migrate throughout the year within and outside the boundaries of the park that expand across Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho. These states are financially responsible for managing their wildlife, protecting wildlife migration corridors and wildlife habitats, resolving conflicts with wolves and grizzly bears, reducing wildlife vehicle collisions, and mitigating impacts of disease by wildlife that migrate to and from Yellowstone National Park. This joint resolution would request the United States Secretary of the Interior and the Director of the National Park Service enter into an agreement with the states of Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho to impose a wildlife conservation fee in Yellowstone National Park to help the states support the wildlife management priorities and challenges I have already mentioned. Why wouldn't we ask the visitors of Yellowstone that love to view our wildlife to help pay for the conservation and management of these species in our states? Why shouldn't the millions of tourists that drive through Wyoming to Yellowstone help pay the cost of wildlife vehicle collision mitigation projects? I have worked with outfitters, researchers, conservationists, and the agencies in charge of Wyoming's wildlife in developing this resolution. Thank you, and I would stand for questions.
We're back on the bill, 122. Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One thing I've learned over the years is that when we do a joint resolution, the people we send them to don't hardly ever read them. So I'm wondering if maybe we could raise more money if we would come back with a second reading amendment to turn this into a Yellowstone license plate and maybe a Teton license plate, and raise the money that way instead of wasting paper on a resolution.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Northrop. Chairman Northrop.
The mic. There it is. Thank you. My question is, Are Wyoming residents exempt from this fee?
Representative Summers.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is just to start a conversation. In fact, in the last few days, I've even had conversations where apparently the Secretary of Interior is actually looking for projects and ways to involve the states with Wyoming with wildlife issues. And so I think it is really a prime opportunity. This is the first time in a long time we've had a Secretary of Interior that has experience at the boundaries of this park. And he's from Montana. He understands the issues. And I think this is the time where we can actually have a conversation about how we can help pay for basically wildlife conservation efforts. And I love the license plate, but this is a different conversation, and the details are to be worked out. It could be that we take in part of the fee that already exists. It could be that it's an additional fee, $1 fee, and even those of us that live in Wyoming and travel through Yellowstone, you know, would we mind paying $1 to support wildlife, or perhaps it turns into a voluntary fee, and it's just part of the ask at the gate, and you can decide to do it or not. It's just to start a conversation and say it's an important idea for us in Wyoming.
Further discussion on House Joint Resolution 5. Seeing none, all those in favor of Chairman Allen's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution 5 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The ayes have it. House Joint Resolution 5 has passed Committee of the Whole. Division being called. All those in favor of House Joint Resolution 5, please stand. Stand and stand still, please. Those opposed? Less than 32. House Joint Resolution 5 has passed Committee of the Whole.
Mr. Chair?
Privilege of the floor. Representative Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. It's late tonight after 8, and I see there's some legislative spouses out there. Under Rule 15.1A, is it all right with the chair if I invite them to join us here in the chamber and have the comfy seats for the rest of the evening?
That certainly seems fine with me. Whether they would want to come in here, that's a different discussion. But they're certainly welcome to join us. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I was just in the bullpen a few moments ago, and they're working feverishly on amendments. So if you've had amendments dropped out, they're trying to get them numbered in order for tomorrow and things. So if you're ready for your amendment to be numbered, signed off, got your co-sponsors, go ahead and drop them off, let them know so they're not waiting here late. When we leave, they're still here working. So that would be great. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 64. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 64, introduced by Representative Blake, Use of Hemp Extracts, an act relating to public health and safety. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Beitman, Olson, Pelkey, Stith, and Winters. Noes, Representatives Jennings, Kirkbride, Pinnell, Salazar. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 64 do pass. I turn the explanation over to our good friend from House District 39, where the river is envious.
Wow. What was that word? Representative Blake.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's an honor to bring you House Bill 64, and I promise to not get out into the weeds on this bill here, right? Mr. Chairman, members of the 64th, this is about freedom. This is about a choice you can make to self-administer a harmless oil to help out with a number of maladies that you may have. And you're going to hear probably from some people who don't like this that it's creeping in, that evil demon weed is going to be creeping in on this. This has nothing to do with marijuana. This bill is about hemp extract. And folks, it's legal in Wyoming right now if you go to a neurologist, if you get a card from the Department of Health, and if you're a minor child with intractable seizures or Dravet syndrome. This product is being sold all over the state. Some people think it's legal. You wouldn't believe the stuff on social media I've heard. It's legal. What are you talking about? We don't need this bill. Well, we do need this bill, folks. It's about being able to choose what you want to use to help with anxiety, migraines, seizures. There's a whole list of things. So what this bill does is it eliminates the need to go to a neurologist, eliminates having to go to the Department of Health and get a card, and it lets you use this if you're over 18 years of age. It provides for the use of a minor. You can use it if their parent or guardian chooses that they want to use it. So I'd ask for your favorable consideration and stand for any questions.
Any discussion on the bill? Discussion on the bill? Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and in support, vote aye. Question.
Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Kirkbride's motion, the Committee of the Whole rises to report. It do so with the recommendation that House Bill 64 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 64 is passed, Committee of the Whole.
The next bill,
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Okay, we're to the last page now, folks. So pull your sheet out. We're starting off with House Bill 86. Just follow along the sheet. House Bill 130, 146, 156. Move House Bill 159 to the bottom of the list and insert House Bill 170. Move House Bill 155 to the bottom, House Bill 65 to the bottom, 59 to the bottom, and then House Bill 20 and House Bill 31. I'll just read the list again real quickly. House Bill 86, 130. 146, 156, 170, 20, and 31. Thank Everyone you. Got it?
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 86. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 86, introduced by Representative Stiff. Medicaid birth cost recovery, an act relating to welfare. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to committee number 2, appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, Wilson. No, Representative Nicholas. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
Just hang on a sec, guys.
Mr. Chairman, there is a correction. This bill was referred to committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Representatives Barlow, Clem, Dayton, Halverson, and McGuire. Noes, Representatives Giroux, Hallinan, Lone, and Sweeney. Signed, Representative Halverson, Vice Chairman. It was then referred, Mr. Chairman, to committee number two.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Barlow?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 86 do pass. I also further move the standing committee amendment. And, Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do is turn over the discussion of the bill in general to Representative Stith, and then I will dispense with the standing committee amendment, and then I believe there's a committee of the whole amendment after that. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I would turn over the explanation of the bill to Representative Stith.
Representative Stith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I ask you to vote aye on House Bill 86, a Medicaid birth cost recovery. House Bill 86 requires higher-income fathers to reimburse the state a portion of the state's costs for the births paid for by Medicaid. We have 4% unemployment, but 36% of all births here in the state are paid for by Medicaid. This bill, by requiring higher-income fathers to reimburse the state a portion of the costs, should generate revenue for the state. Wisconsin has a similar program, makes about $17 million a year. They have seven times as many babies paid for by Medicaid. If we have a similar experience, makes about $2 million. The, as you heard, came through the Labor Health Committee. Appropriations suggested an amendment, which is Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 that we'll get to. The Appropriations Committee essentially said we need two things. One, since Department of Family Services is going to have some startup costs, there should be a one-time appropriation, which is provided for, of $350,000 out of the general fund on a one-time basis. And the Appropriations Committee also asked that the Department of Family Services report back after the biennium to see if this is working, essentially. So Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, which I also ask you to support, does that. And with that, I'll turn it over to Chairman Barlow for Standing Committee Amendment 1.
Sure. Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'd just like to kind of give you a thumbnail of what the Standing Committee Amendment does. It does essentially two things. One, in the bill, as the good representative outlined, there's a sliding scale, if you will, for different levels of poverty of the father of the child. So if they are between 200 and 250, they're responsible for X amount of the birth cost. Next stair step, 20%, 40%, 60%. So what the Standing Committee did, what the Labor Health Committee did, was we basically said first step's 10%, then 20, 30, 40, 50. So at 400% of poverty level, the father would be responsible for half of the average birth costs, Medicaid birth costs in the state. So 50%. Previously, the bill went up to 80%. The committee amended that down to the stair step 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. The second thing that the bill, that the Standing Committee did with their amendment, this is line 16 of the amendment, 17 of the amendment, was there was kind of an incentive, if you will, to pay the costs of the Department of Family Services to do this activity. So 15% was what the good representative had in his bill as their share of whatever was returned. The general funds that returned, they got to keep 40% of it, and he has a purpose for that, and I'll let him speak to that purpose. The committee didn't think 15% was probably adequate to deal with the administrative costs, the potential administrative costs, so we bumped it to 40%. So that's the committee of the whole amendment. We stair-stepped, we'd reduced, but stair-stepped the amounts at which the father would be responsible for based on his income level. No one below 200% owes anything, and above 400%, they all owe 50%. So that's the stair step, and the second part was the amount that the department that's responsible for families would get to keep out of whatever they were able to collect, general fund side, remembering that Medicaid is 50 federal funds, 50% federal funds, 50% general funds. So that would, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for any questions on the amendment, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Thank you.
Representative Brown, do you have questions on Standing Committee Amendment? Go ahead.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. So just out of curiosity, so I can wrap my head around this a little bit better, what is current federal poverty level? So I have an understanding of what the percentages are going to be for that father making those wages.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you. So 100% is in that $14,000 range, so $14,000, $28,000, $30,000. You do the math. Thank you. It's easily found on that electronic device in front of you with a quick search.
Is there any other questions on the standing committee amendment? Question being called on standing committee amendment number one. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. All those opposed, say no. Standing committee amendment number one is passed. We're back on the bill. Representative Stiff.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the committee of the whole amendment number one. That amendment does appropriate on a one-time basis $350,000 to the Department of Family Services, which it would use to go out and collect from fathers. Again, should generate, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $2 million every year, so it seems like it's a pretty good return on investment.
Any questions on Committee of the Whole Amendment number one? Cruising. Representative Gray.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman. So I guess my question is, in terms of the budgeting on this, yes, there's going to be a savings, but my concern would be, is that are those savings just going to be absorbed by the agency? How do we make sure they revert to the general fund and aren't just, you know, I guess that's my question. Because now we're adding this investment in, you know. Thank you.
Representative Stiff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative from the Oil City, thank you so much. As amended by the Standing Committee amendment, 60% of the state's net would go to the general fund, 40% goes to the Department of Family Services, essentially. So a piece of it, not the 85% as in the original, but a piece of it comes to the general fund.
Is there any other questions on the Committee of the Whole Amendment number one? Question being called on Committee of the Whole Amendment. Whoop, Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, just to kind of, well, I was going to, is this the Committee of the Whole Amendment that puts money
it
back
is.
In? So I thought I would just quickly explain, Mr. Chairman, kind of what why JAC did what they did. Mr. Chairman, if you look at the fiscal note, it was about almost a $500,000 potential impact on federal funds, potential impact.
Negative.
Potential impact. Yeah, negative. And then, Mr. Chairman, it was estimated by this agency that it would have cost them roughly $357,764 a year. And so we just told the good bringer of the bill, hey, go back and try to revise that downward to reduce the cost of this program. So just to explain, and that's what the good bringer of this amendment is doing, is just trying to bring some money in to kind of replace some of those impacts. So I just wanted everybody to understand what was happening there.
Any other discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment number one? Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if I heard the last speaker right and I was paying attention, is this actually going to break even in the next biennium? Is this program going to break even, or are we just going to feed it?
Representative Stiff.
Mr. Chairman, I would happily trade my law practice for the right to collect these accounts, because we're going to be collecting $5,000 at a time from about 700 fathers. The liability, and this liability is one that, as a domestic support obligation, would survive bankruptcy, be non-dischargeable in bankruptcy. This should generate, even at a 60%. The collection rate right now is 67% on average for child support. If you collected even 60%, it should bring in a couple million bucks.
Any other comments or questions in regards to Committee of the Whole Amendment number one? Question being called on Committee of the Whole Amendment number one. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed, say no. Committee of the Whole Amendment number one has passed. There's got to be benefits to being the chair. All those in favor, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 has failed. 27-29. We're back on the bill. Representative Stith.
Yes, I think it's good public policy to pass this because the idea is not just to make money. Even if it just breaks even, what you're doing is you're encouraging higher-income fathers to not have their children on Medicaid at all. Thank you.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that this is going to be a big losing money proposition for the state. At the way that he's got set up the poverty level and the amount of payment into this, at 200% of poverty, the amount that they go towards, pay towards the cost of the birth costs is 10%. At 250, it's a little bit more and a little bit more. So I think that the amount that's going to be paid in is going to be fairly minimal. The income on these fathers is probably pretty low. They're taking up with single women, and I would say they're going to be fairly young, and their average income is going to be, I would say, probably around $25,000, at which case their percent of contribution to the state would only be 10 or maybe 20%. So I think that, unfortunately, I think my colleague would lose money rather than make $2 million on this if he did take up the state's part in this issue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Guru.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too rise against the bill. The bringer of the bill has a great idea, and it's filled with promise. Unfortunately, the reality, I think, is a little bit different. If you look at the initial cost, we're losing before we start, and I do not believe, and I have some experience in this area as a business person trying to deal, it just always seems that when I get that letter about child support or some of these costs from other states, the employees, they know pretty well, and they're gone when those letters come, and I often think when I take a look at them, how much did it cost to generate this letter? How much time was spent tracking this down? Ladies and gentlemen, good members of the 64th, it's a great idea, but it's a loser. And I wish it weren't so, but I stand in opposition to this bill. It's just too costly to the department, and it will not get the returns that you think. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the bill, because there are now, because it's if you look at the fiscal note, so currently, you know, what the Department of Revenue says it will cost over the next biennium, probably $700,000 at the end of the day. Here's how they came up with that. So when you have child support orders, those take precedence. And so if you have a child support order and you have to pay $350 a month or whatever it is, but then if you have an additional judgment, which is to pay for the birthing costs, that goes down to the bottom of the list for that person who's having his wages in held by the court, and what happens? And so then, if you don't collect on that, in the state of Wyoming, we have a 67% collection success rate, but if you start having little tiny judgments that are unsuccessful, there's a statutory federal requirement that demonstrates how much money that you get back and how much in federal dollars. And the experience of the Department of Health is that for these smaller judgments that are $1,000, $2,000, you can't find them. They don't pay it because their wages are already being garnished. It's hard to hunt them down. So they believe that that 67% collection rate with numerous lawsuits one after the other is going to go down. And every time that goes down, it drops, we receive less federal funding. In addition to that, let's say it's 2,000 lawsuits that they have to file for collection a year for the attorney's fees in order to perform these. And these are all contract lawyers. So you got a contract lawyer who's going after $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 judgment. So by the time you do the filing fee, by the time you do the process serving, by the time you get them into court and try to find them, have them show up, it's going to cost at minimum $500 or $1,000 per case just to file the thing. And so as you start adding these up on these tiny judgments that the folks really aren't going to, very hard to collect on, it's not going to be a moneymaker. It's going to cost money at the end of the day. And so because of that, we brought that amendment saying, okay, we need to add some money into this to make this thing work, and we have a year to make it work, and this body just killed that. So right now, this is going to be a money loser to the state. So on and against.
Representative Lindholm.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and in favor of this legislation, and here's why. I was asked to co-sponsor this, and immediately I was pumped because I've been thinking about this situation for a lot of years because this happens a lot. And it's not the type of individuals that are making $35,000 or $40,000 a year. No. These are individuals up in my neck of the woods that are making over $100,000 a year. They're living at the end of the cul-de-sac in their three-story house with their girlfriend of 7 to 10 years that they've got children with, which good for them. But they're taking advantage of this system. They know that if they don't get married, then they won't actually have to prove that they're domiciling together because we don't have that requirement. What this requirement would do would make these types of individuals accountable for their own children. These individuals have health insurance. They've got it. But why would you use it when you've got a deductible, right? So that's what it comes down to. Now, we've heard from the department that this could possibly be a loser. And we've heard gestations that this is a loser. We actually got a state where this actually works, where this is actually bringing in money. So we can go off the theoretical, well, they're all going to disappear as soon as we get the letter in the mail. Or we can go off of where a state has actually put this implemented in and actually seen a return on money. And that's based on fact, not theoretical. So that's what I'm going to ask you guys, to vote in favor of this and try to turn these individuals around. It happens all of the time. And these are not your $30,000 to $40,000 individuals. These are your $100,000 plus individuals that own boats and all sorts of things because they figured out how to work the system. So this is one area we can close it down, hopefully give it a try. It works in other states already, and it's not a theory. Thank you.
Representative McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To that, I would say yes. And part of it is we have got to start changing behaviors. And right now with the current system, there is no incentive for people to use their own health insurance. And I've had employees myself where I had good health insurance, and one of my employees, it would have cost that person $12 a month to take advantage of the same health insurance that I used when we had our kids, but she did not want to do that because with Medicaid, everything was paid for. It was free. She could go as many times as she wanted. There was no consequence, no copay, nothing else. And to add to it, and everybody needs to pay attention to this, to add to it, her caseworker coached her to make sure that when she filled out her paperwork, wink, wink, the father of the child did not live with her full time. We have to start changing that behavior or we will never get back to the point where we have people that are contributing to the economy at large. I mean, it's easy to make just enough cash to get by
and then get your health insurance for free and all of your other benefits for free? And when do you take those people and turn them into good, productive citizens and send them down the other road where they're trying as hard as they can every day to be good, productive citizens? So I'm on and for this bill because if for nothing else, it sends the message that you at least need to try, just try, to be responsible for you and your family financially. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against this bill, in all honesty, the scenario of the $100,000 kind of dad who is figured out how to not pay for his child, to me, isn't the correct scenario that we should be thinking about. You know, there's always going to be people out there. They drive me as crazy as they do you. I mean, no two ways about it. I hate hearing those stories. But the reality is what we're really, really contemplating here is a young woman who is on Medicaid, who likely has as a boyfriend a young man who does not make that much money. So I did. I just looked up what's the federal poverty rate. Somebody just looked at it, asked the question. And for one person, it's $12,000. So as soon as that dad makes $24,000 under this bill, he'll be obligated to pay for some of the costs of the birth. So I think it is much more likely that what we are contemplating in this bill is a young family making $24,000 a year with an infant at home and now saying that the mom has to say who the dad is and the dad has to now pay for some of the costs of that birth. That's the reality of what's going on there. So we are going after, and we know a third to half of births are with women who are on Medicaid. That is much more the likely scenario. And I'd say that doesn't make sense to me. That just doesn't make sense that we should be using the long arm of the state to do that, and then we're not giving the Department of Family Services money to do it. But I also have... there's some logical inconsistencies in the bill that concern me, that we say that the department needs to do this within 90 days, but on page 11, the following persons are not required to cooperate with the department. And number one is on page 12, line 2, a person who is pregnant or has been pregnant in the preceding 60 days. So we have this obligation for something to happen within 90 days, but the mom is exempt up to 60 days, and then there has to be all sorts of kind of paternity testing. So I'm a little confused, honestly, how this bill would actually work in terms of all of the kind of rules that are set out. But I'm mostly concerned about who we are really talking about and who would be harmed. And I honestly think it is that young family living in poverty. So on and against this bill.
Representative Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I want to bring us back to the conversation and who we're really focusing on. We are absolutely focusing this bill's intent on higher income fathers who can afford to pay the cost of the birth. And the average cost of a birth with insurance is somewhere near $1,000 in the state of Wyoming. The average cost without insurance, so what's that look like? What's that? What is it? $10,000. $10,000. So what I want you to do is compare this in your minds to child support and think about that. When we have a custodial parent, or excuse me, a non-custodial parent who owes tens of thousands of dollars, and trust me, that's not rare. I don't know off the top of my head how many cases fall into that category. You can look that up yourself, but I can tell you it's a pretty high category. We don't just sit on our hands and decide not to collect it. We go out and we collect it. And this bill actually provides the exact same mechanism that you have in child support. On page 12, creates a statute, 14-2-822, order adjudicating parentage, which then goes on to specify that there would be an enforceable order to recover the costs. And so I understand that this bill doesn't upfront fund the Department of Family Services for that collection like it does child support. And maybe that's something that should have been looked at more closely as this went through the process. I'm not sure why that came out of JAC without that. But I don't know that that makes it... I voted for that amendment. All right. Listen, folks. And strangely enough, several members of JAC voted against that amendment. That amendment would have provided the funding necessary that we're arguing about. The reality is that it's no different than collecting on child support. And the court has in its hands all kinds of tools when collecting on support, and it will have the same tools when collecting on the insurance costs. I don't think it's any different. So I'd urge an aye vote in support of this bill. You got two more attempts to work on this bill, to work out some of what's been pointed out as mechanical errors inside the bill. I don't think that we do anyone a service by not using our other readings to adjust those. But I'd take a close look at page 12, which I don't see how this differs much more than our child support collection system. Thank you.
Representative Furphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Extremely brief. If the state can prove paternity, there are professional collection agencies out there that can make a decision on trying to collect this money, so the state doesn't need to expend a lot of money on trying to collect. Turn it over to them. They are the pros. They do that for a living. So that's what I would suggest. Thank you.
Representative Eklund.
I don't usually talk on these deals, but I can't resist this. I cannot believe that these are just young families without any money. I've got a friend who's a doctor in an affluent neighborhood who has a group of state employees, a large group. She asked, don't they have any kind of health benefits? And I said, oh, boy, they've got good health benefits. Later we figure out that this couple is together. The woman takes out Medicaid. They've got plenty of money, and if they were both on the health plan, it would pay for it. But I think this bill has huge merit. This is a good place to start on our Medicaid problem.
Is there any other discussion? Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, ladies and gentlemen, I would totally agree with the good representative that likes to fly airplanes that we need to change behavior. But folks, this bill doesn't do that. If you want to change behaviors, then you modify our insurance laws so that you have a child and you have health insurance, that it covers that child whether you're married or not. That's where we actually collect some money and get this stuff paid for, particularly if you have complications where the costs skyrocket. Here we're talking about the average of a $10,000 bill, and you're saying they're 40% or 50% responsible for it. And what we're going to do is, we're, at the end of the day, we're going to make the state have to pay for this and the Department of Health. And so we continually just suck money out of the Department of Health. You know, their estimate, and they came and testified. We love this idea, but we've done this because they've done child custody for years and years and years. If there's a child custody battle, the court, and if you go to court and ask for costs, it gets paid for. It gets wrapped into part of your child support payment. This is totally different. These are people you got to hunt down, and they had went through the costs, and it's going to cost them $750,000 in the next 2.5-3 years in order, they think, out of our state health department's budget. So our recommendation was a not pass, but to bring an amendment to help fund this thing and get it off the ground and see if it works. So on and against.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I probably delivered about 40% of my patients were on Medicaid. And I can't remember one of these millionaire cases
that are discussed in this at this organization here. All of these people were poor, and the fathers were not, they were not easily identified. So I think it's very unlikely that this would ever pay for itself if these same people that I delivered were involved in this process. I think the state would have lost a heck of a lot of money. So with that, I would say vote no on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, right now, the Department of Family Services spends $24 million every year for pregnant women in these births. How much money do we collect right now? Zero. We're getting $0 right now. With the Committee of the Whole Amendment number one having been defeated, this program now costs out of the general fund budget $0. You can vote for this. They send out letters to higher income fathers, and they can collect. There are 2,700 Medicaid births in Wyoming every year. Department of Family Services estimates there's going to be a core group of about 700 fathers who are higher income. They will have the, under their rules, if they determine that a father is on the edge and it's not worth going after, they don't have to chase them. With respect to the comments by the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, who relied upon DFS's estimates, if you rely upon DFS's estimates, you have to also accept their estimate of what it costs per case, which was $529 per case. And if they think they're not going to collect $529, they don't have to go after that person. This, the, with respect to whether you can find the fathers, the paternity establishment percentage in Wyoming is extremely high. On DFS's most recent report, strangely enough, the paternity establishment percentage was over 100%. Okay? That's what their report says. But what that does tell you is that single women ultimately are not shy about collecting child support. Fathers in the age of DNA testing, they don't get to hide. They're easy to find. It's already DFS's job to find these people. They do find these people. It's already their job to establish paternity orders. It's already their job and already in their budget to get child support enforcement orders. All we're asking them to do is to add one line item that says, oh, by the way, in addition to your child support, you owe the state $2,500 or $5,000, as the case may be. I ask for your vote on House Bill 86.
All right. Sensing that everybody's ready for the question. Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Barlow's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 86 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 86 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Division being called, all those in favor, please rise. Hold still, folks. Olson. Thirty-one. All those opposed, please rise. Less than 31. Like I said. House Bill 86 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 130. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 130, introduced by Representative Henderson. State Fair Endowment, an act relating to the State Fair. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation at due pass amended. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Nicholas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just so excited after that last debate. I had to take a deep breath. So I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises and report, it does so with a recommendation that House Bill 130 do pass. And the substitute bill, which is the House or Senate Committee, House Standing Committee, Bennett, number one. And I will turn the explanation of the substitute bill over to the bringer of the bill, Representative from Laramie County.
Representative Henderson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I bring you a substitute bill here that was made, frankly, much better by the Appropriations Committee. I briefed you on the basics of it, how this endowment fund works when we voted to introduce it. Here's some of the things that really helped it. Number one, the fund, the appropriation that you see in Section 3 is $100,000, as I said before, but the Appropriations Committee also added $100,000 in the matching side of it to get it started, which is good. And then they also helped the process of, you know, quarterly 25% of the earnings, the investment earnings, will go to the state fair account, and then 75% of the investment earnings will flow back into the endowment to help grow it. And then I told you about the taking a dollar of every revenue, taking a half a penny. Well, they increased that to a penny. And so this is going to be a good fund. It's also inflation protected, and the good news is there's wide support for this. So if there aren't any questions, I would call for the question.
Sensing that you're ready to vote on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, which is essentially a substitute bill, all those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. Any further discussion on the bill? Now, question on the bill being called. All those in favor of Chairman Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 130 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 130 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 146. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 146, introduced by Representative Connolly, Equal Pay Penalties, an act relating to labor and employment. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Noes, Representatives Edwards and Lone. Signed, Representatives Zwanitzer. Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report it. Do so with a recommendation that House Bill 146 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I would turn it over to the good Minority Floor Leader.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move House Bill 146 and ask for your favorable consideration. Friends, what this bill does is simply align penalties for violation of our equal pay statute with other statutes in Title 27, such as hours of work and wage violations. And if there are no questions, I would ask for your aye vote for penalty parity.
Question being called on the bill, unless there's further discussion. Okay, question being called on the bill. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 146 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 146 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 156. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 156, introduced by Representative Zwanitzer, State Songs, an act relating to the state song. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Bovee, Brown, Flitner, Freeman, Hunt, Kenner, Paxton, Piperinen. No, Representative Northrup. Signed, Representative Bovee, Acting Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 156 do pass. And here with the explanation of the bill is the representative from the Capital City.
Chairman Zwanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, this is the second Wyoming state song. We already have one in statute. The major question I got asked in the committee was how many states have two songs? So if you look on your desk, some states have 10 state songs. It's amazing. About half of them. It came out about 5 minutes ago. It should be on your desks. So again, I know I've talked about this three times now, but this song is being performed all over the world from two gals raised right here in Wyoming. They've been friends of mine, friends of my family for a long time. It's already being broadcast on our tourism sites. Some of the money actually doesn't go to them. The money is coming back. All the royalties from the song come back to the state. And so it's a win-win for Wyoming and a win-win for this body. You all heard the song last year. If anybody would like a copy of it, I'd be happy to get you a copy as well. Be happy to answer any questions.
Is there any discussion? Chairman Northrup.
Thank you. Member 64th, this is a policy question. Ask yourself, how many state birds would you like to have? How many state reptiles would you like to have? Would you like to have another one? How about how many license plates? There you go. So what I'm saying is, it's a policy question. Thank you.
Representative Larson.
I would agree. I would agree with the last speaker. It's a policy question. For every additional thing we get, whether it's the first specialty license plate was probably pretty cool, but now it's just it's diluted the meaning of it. The more we add, the more dilution there is. And it's just un-Wyoming-ing. It's a plot.
Chairman Zwanzer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe to the former speaker, we have two statutes at our state capitol, in our statutes, and in Capitol Hall in D.C. I don't know if he would like to get rid of the good member from his county is one of those two statutes, but I would like to think they're both important to Wyoming and our history. The current state song has been in statute since the 50s. It was written in 1914. I think it's nice to have an active state song that is getting us royalties. It's being performed all over the world. It's been on several different broadcast stations, and it's been a real benefit to Wyoming. So I would encourage your aye support.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of this bill, and I was going to sing a few stanzas of it, but I don't know if I have permission to do so.
Go ahead.
Please vote for this, Mr. Chairman, members of the 64th.
Sensing you're ready for the question and the question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Northrup's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 156 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 156 is passed, Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 170. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 170, introduced by Representative Clem. Wyoming Children's Trust Fund Amendments, an act relating to the Children's Trust Fund. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? What is your pleasure, Chairman Nicholas?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it does so with a recommendation that House Bill number 170 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment number 1. And I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to Representative Clem, and then after he presents it, we'll address the amendment.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Real quick, House Bill 170 does two things. This is to the Wyoming Children's Trust Fund. Wyoming's Children's Trust Fund is dedicated to the prevention of child abuse and neglect. So what this is, what this does in this bill is there is currently a 7-member board. These members serve without compensation. It adds one member to, or it adds 2 members to this. The Standing Committee Amendment removes one of those members. But you can see that on there. And then it also addresses the fees. So this fund has traditionally been fueled by fees to vital statistics requests. And really what it does is it strikes language there talking about a cap. There was a cap that was set. We've been collecting this fee for 35 years. It's taken that long for this fund to get to $5 million. And all this seeks to do is remove the cap. With that, I'll turn the Standing Committee Amendment over to the good representative from this county.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The JAC just changed the numbers of, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 170 and asked for your favorable consideration. And what we did was just drop down the number of increased board members. You'll see on the top of page 2, it was taken from 7 to 9, and we moved it back down to 8. And we did that down on line 14 and 15, where we struck out the director of the Department of Corrections.
Any discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1? Question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed, say no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. We're back on the bill. Question being Chairman Greer.
I'm sorry, I need to know, okay, so on the repealer, so I guess I need to understand, is there $5 million in this account now? And if we've certified there's $5 million, where does it continue to receive funds from? I haven't had a chance to look up all the statutes.
Representative Clem?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, there's currently $5.8 million in this account right now. It reached the $5 million cap in August 2013, but funny thing is the Treasurer doesn't certify anything. So it was actually caught that this account had more than $5 million in August 2016. And so currently it doesn't receive any funds at all. And what it does is it survives off of interest. There is a grant that the Wyoming Children Trust Fund gets from the federal government, but it only can utilize that grant with matching funds from the state. The repealer goes to that cap. So if you look there, and I don't have it right there in front of me, but it talks about that $5 million cap, and really that's what's being repealed there upon certification by the treasurer that the cap has reached $5 million, that these funds continue to accrue in there. So that's what the repealer is.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Chairman Greer.
Yeah, okay, and I see they still can receive grant monies in donations, and that remains in subsection C. Okay, I got it. Thank you.
Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I remember, we had something like this in our committee a year or so ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and maybe, right in there, that after that $5 million is reached, that money spills into something else that's needed. So you need to answer for me and probably the rest of the members here, whose ox is being gored if you remove that cap?
Representative Clem.
Mr. Chairman, that money doesn't revert to any other fund. It stays within the Wyoming Children's Trust Fund. That's where it stays. So if there's anything that spills over, it just stays right in there.
Any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 170 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 170 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 20. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 20, introduced by Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Game and Fish Agreements with Federal Agencies, an act relating to game and fish. Mr. Chairman, this bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which returned a committee recommendation that it pass, do pass, amended. Ayes, Representatives Allen, Klim, Flitner, Halverson, McGuire, Steinmetz. Noes, Representatives Freeman, Giroux, and Haley. Signed, Representative Allen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Allen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 20 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment number 1. So, Mr. Chairman, we've really been working on this quite a bit. We have a few variations. So I would urge the body to adopt this, and then we're going to further amend. So I'd call for that.
Any further questions on Standing Committee Amendment number 1? Question being called on Standing Committee Amendment number 1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has passed. Back on the bill, Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then we would like to further amend, and I'm going to turn the management of the bill over to the good representative from House Bill 20. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to House Bill 20 and ask for your favorable consideration. So, Mr. Chairman, really what this issue is the Game and Fish creates, and I think I can use that word anyway, the agency that works with our wildlife and the governor's office, they create MOUs with federal agencies that the public really never gets a chance to see. And these can have a large impact. So I think TRW worked on that. I'm not on TRW, but they worked on that. When they came out with this language, which was basically to allow the committee to review an MOU and approve or deny an MOU, there was some concern with the chief executive on the ability to create timely MOUs and MOUs in a manner that allows for the negotiation necessary to continue. So I've worked with all of these parties. I think the chair and the vice chair of TRW and the executive, and I don't know that any of them are completely comfortable, but basically what this does is two things. It allows the commission to approve an MOU, which it does, and it just so I'm going to just walk you through this. So it does two things, and then I'll walk you through the bill. It allows the Wyoming Game and Fish Commission to approve the MOUs, which they do, and to do it in a public hearing. And then the second thing it does is it would treat it like a rule where management council has to kind of bless a rule as a rule comes out. So it's kind of an internal process where when a rule comes out, it's blessed, and then it's goes back to the governor. So it provides us as the legislature the ability to look at an MOU and have some input. But it doesn't do it through a very lengthy process, which could actually delay these MOUs. So I'm going to walk you through the bill, and I'm going to read it as it would be amended. And I apologize for that, but that's just the best way to do it. So it would now read an act relating to game and fish, providing for review and recommendation of agreements entered into or extended with federal agency as specified, requiring the Game and Fish Department to report on agreements entered into or extended with federal agencies as specified, requiring the Game and Fish to approve agreements enter into or extended with federal agencies, not my writing, so in requiring public hearings as specified. Go on down to line 13, agreements with federal agencies, reporting requirements, public hearings. Flip over to page 2 in subsection A. on or after July 1st, 2018, and any memorandum of understanding or cooperative agreement specified in subsection C of this section and approved under subsection D of this section be entered into or extended by the commission or department with any federal agency shall, and then you go down, be forwarded to the management council for review and recommendation prior to the memorandum of understanding or cooperative agreement being signed by the governor as AG, yeah, governor AG or director. The management council shall, within 15 days after receiving the agreement, submit its recommendations to the governor, AG, and director. And you can see that that is crossed out. I, that provision, include a provision that the state, so this kind of replaces that. And then it goes on to say in Romanet 2, be forwarded to the Joint Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resource Interim Committee after all the appropriate parties have signed the MOU or cooperative agreement. It goes on, you know, and maintains subsection B in its current place through page 2. On to page 3, all of subsection B remains the same. So in subsection C, it says this section shall only apply to memorandum of understanding or cooperative agreements relating to any species that has received a species status code under the Endangered Species Act, and it deletes or sensitive species under any federal agency list. So that goes away, and then it creates a D. Any MOU or any MOU or cooperative agreement subjected to this section shall be approved by the commission in a public hearing, and then, and really that's it. So this is just an attempt to kind of pare back from where we were at, which would really have caused problems developing an MOU, and provide a process by which we have a little more transparency with the development of MOUs, but not delay them. So that's the amendment, Committee of Whole Amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment number one? Chairman Greer.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm just as tired as everybody else, but in the amendment makes this a little bit better, but I question, okay, it's the executive branch's duty and responsibility to do this, and I realize we get upset sometimes with these MOUs, and I do happen to agree that they should be provided to one of our committees for review. And that opportunity, I just question this going to management council. You know, we're set up where our statutes that we pass, when the rules are promulgated, they come to management council with a recommendation from LSO and maybe sometimes comment from the AG's office. And then we have an opportunity to comment on those. But for management council to comment on a proposed MOU just seems to be we're crossing those lines between our responsibilities and that of the executive. So I'm going to vote in favor of this amendment because it makes the bill better, but I think we need to look at that more closely.
Representative Guru.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with my good friend from District 27 that this has made this bill better, but I rise in opposition. I'm not going to give you the speech that I gave in committee, but just suffice it to say that I think this is a bill that's fraught with peril for this body and fraught with peril for the Management Council. Just close your eyes for a minute, and I know this is never going to happen, but just close your eyes for just a second, and imagine if there was another group of people in here that had different political views than the ones that you hold. And now they're in control of the body, and they are voting on these MOUs. That should scare you enough to vote no. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Quite a nightmare story there. I have to rise in support of this amendment because it makes this not quite as bad of a bill, but it's still a pretty bad bill. I think the chairman of Minerals made a very good statement. We are going to be bridging this gap between the executive branch duties and the legislative branch duties. Ladies and gentlemen, it is our job to legislate, not execute law. That is the executive branch's duty. Let them do this. We have way, way too much control on this if we put this bill forward. And I think the past speaker said it very well, and it kind of scares me just a little bit too much.
Any further discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1? Question being called. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has passed. Any further discussion on the bill? Oh, Representative Blake.
Yeah, I would like to know from the bringer of the bill, was there a particular MOU that gave us heartburn? And my second question is, doesn't the commission have in a public setting go over these MOUs so the public can attend, legislators can attend? So I want to know what MOU has brought this forward, or even if there was one, or we're perceived there is one, but I'd like to know that. The way it sits right now, I don't think I'm going to vote for this one.
Vice Chairman Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The genesis of this bill was during the interim committee when we were reviewing statutes, and there was a reference to the MOUs regarding endangered species. So I would like to remind you this is on 5 MOUs regarding endangered species, and it's the agreements with the Game and Fish. One of them had a completely open-ended appendice, and so they could add or subtract species on there. The federal government could on their own without our agreement. So that caused us to look into this a little more, and then we found out that MOUs are not subject to the public process. They don't go through a public review or anything like that. And because this is a delegated authority from this body to the Game and Fish Commission, we really felt like it was important to have some oversight over that. A rulemaking authority like the Management Council has, or however we need to do it, but we delegated this authority as the legislature. So we need to have some kind of a review process in order to keep track of what's going on so that our folks are represented. Anyway, that is why the genesis of the bill and the issue we're trying to get at. We'd want transparency in this process. Thank you.
Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last time I spoke at this microphone, I got duct taped out of order, but I promise not to do that again tonight. I urge a no vote on House Bill 20. I urge you to pull this thing out. The last amendment did improve it, but not far enough. This is a total overreach. I mean, really, timely MOUs for review by the Management Council. Then it didn't take out any of the language, really, and cleaned up in Section 1 on page 1, going to page 2 and 3 of this new 23-1-110, which, if you look at that, you know, go back to page 3 on powers and duties given to the Game and Fish Commission, and in every section back there, which wasn't addressed by that amendment, on line 1, page 4, right there, to enter into cooperative agreements with educational institutions and other agencies to promote wildlife research subject to 23-1-110, which reverts back to the committee, and I appreciate the committee's good work on this, but I think it's ill-fated and misdirected. It's an overreach. And you go on down through, the commission really has no authority. We took this department off the general fund. There's really only 2 commissions that are actually commissions anymore in my mind. That's Game and Fish and WIDOT. We've given them the authority to make the right decisions. We do still have oversight. And if I am positive, if Game and Fish, if we want to see a document, we can have it. We can see it without any of this. The AG's office is involved in these agreements and discussions and negotiations. So is the governor's office. So I don't see a need unless we totally distrust our agencies and we totally want to micromanage these agreements. I just urge you to vote no on House Bill 20.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to remind the body, we do this for exactly zero other state agencies and zero state other state commissions. Vote no. I call for the question.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Allen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 20 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill number 20 has passed Committee of the Whole. Division being called. All those in favor, please rise. My prerogative. Sixteen. All those against, please rise. More than 16. All righty. Pursuant to, and well, having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
House Bill 20. Allen. Aye. Barlow. No. Biteman. Aye. Blackburn. No. Blake. No. Bovee. No. Brown. No. Burkhart. No. Byrd. No. Clausen. Aye. Clem. Aye. Connolly. No. Court. No. Crank. No. Dayton. No. Edwards. Aye. Eklund. Aye. Ayer. No. Flitner. No. Freeman. No. Furphy. No. Giroux. No. Gray. Aye. Greer. No. Haley. No. Hallinan. No. Halverson. Aye. Henderson. No. Hunt. No. Jennings. Aye. Kinner. No. Kirkbride. No. Larson Lloyd. No. Larson Dan. Aye. Lindholm.
Aye.
Lone. Aye. Laux. No. McGuire. No. Madden. No. Miller. Aye. Nicholas. Nicholas. No. Northrup. No. Obermuller. No. Olson. No. Paxton. No. Pelkey. No. Piperinen.
Aye.
Aye. Ponell. No. Salazar. Salazar. Schwartz. No. Simpson. No. Summers. No. Steinmetz. Aye. Stith. Aye. Sweeney. No. Walters. No. Wilson. No. Winters. Aye. Zwanitzer. No, Mr. Speaker. No, Salazar. Salazar, excused. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 17 aye, 42 no, 1 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, House Bill number 20, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 31. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 31, introduced by Representative Henderson. Hathaway Scholarship Application Deadline Extension. An act relating to the Hathaway Scholarship Program. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 4.
you.
Your committee number four, education. This bill was referred to committee number four, education, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Bovee, Hunt, Kinner, Northrup, Paxton, Piperinen. Noes, Representatives Brown, Flitner, and Freeman. Signed, Representative Northrup, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Northrup?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises report, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 31 do pass. And here with the representative, bring the last bill of the night. So get behind Bill.
Representative Henderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 31, the purpose of House Bill 31 is simply stated to give our young people two more years to find their way and decide what they really want to study. As it stands now, the Hathaway Scholarship application has to be submitted within 2 years of graduating from high school. And what this does is extend that to 4 years. When we think about trying to provide opportunity for our young people and those who have gone to college and maybe haven't completed and got a degree, which is one of our top priorities now as far as increasing the number of, baccalaureate degrees in our state, I believe this is an opportunity where we can give our young people a bit more time to decide what they want to stay and make a good life by getting off to a good start with a good education. I would ask for your favorable vote, and I appreciate your consideration. If there aren't any questions, I call for the question.
Representative Brown.
Not so much a question, Mr. Chairman, thank you, but a couple of comments on and against this bill. This is not what the envisioning of the original Hathaway Scholarship was. The kids who are going to be in this program and have the capability of getting into this program are going to be going to college. They don't need 4 years to figure it out. If we're going to give them 4 years, why not give them six? Why not give them eight? Why not give them 10? There's no reason to expand this for another 4 years. They can apply within 2 years, and then they have 6 years after that to already go use these funds to them. Absolutely no reason to vote this bill through.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I guess my question for the last speaker would be, what about those who want to go serve in the military, serve this country? There aren't many terms of duty that are less than 2 years. In fact, I would argue that no one in this body that served less than 2 years. You served 3, 4, 6, whatever your term of duty. So I want to know if there's an exception for military in the current program, because those folks would automatically be shut out. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are already exemptions for that type of stuff, just to clarify that concern. We have exemptions for missions and for any type of servitude outside of the normal daily life. So going out and serving your country is absolutely 100% covered by this, and you do not have to get it within those 2 years. So, again, I stand behind my first statement. There's no reason to bring this bill through.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also don't think that extending the Hathaway Scholarship to out-of-state students was envisioned by the original crafters of this fine program on and in support of the bill.
Any further discussion? Representative Henderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So to my brother from the same city, I hear you, but we have new technology, and we're in exciting times here in this state with the Endow initiative and the things we're trying to get going there. So I would ask for an open mind. I mean, if the members feel that we need to do more to fix something here, I think if you look at it, I'm just changing the one word and giving them a tad bit more time to find their path in life. So if there are no more questions, I'd call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Northrup's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 31 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
I'm legitimately in doubt on this one. So all those in favor, please rise. Thirty-seven. All those opposed? Less than 37. House Bill number 31 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion carries.
Reading clerk, we're getting the Committee of the Whole report. This is the hardest working house in America. Reading clerk will please read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, our Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 125, recommended do pass. House Bill 141, recommended do pass. House Bill 191, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 186, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 129, amended, recommended do pass. House Joint Resolution 2, recommended do pass. House Bill 3, recommended do pass. House Bill 39, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 135, recommended do pass. House Bill 55, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 6, recommended do pass. House Bill 122, recommended do pass. House Joint Resolution 5, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 64, recommended do pass. House Bill 86, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 130, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 146, recommended do pass. House Bill 156, recommended do pass. House Bill 170, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 20, amended, and further amended. Following a fail roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 31. House Bill 31, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Lindholm, Chairman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report, Mr. Speaker.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. And motion has been adopted. Congratulations, 65 bills on Committee of the Whole. Thank you, Chairman Lindholm. That was pretty awesome. Thank you to the body. Good work. We are now on that order business of committee announcements. I don't think we have no standing committee reports. We've cleared the deck. Only got about one bill out there, I think, maybe two on a re-referral. So committee announcements.
Seeing only one. Have multiple Senate files to read in. And we're going to do that tomorrow. So we can get those noticed and get our committees going on those. So, Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your House Appropriations Committee will meet at 8 a.m. to consider House Bill 194 and re-referral of 140. And we may do something with House Bill 138. We'll see.
Okay, any other announcements? Privileges? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 8:30 a.m. Friday, February 23rd, 2018.
Okay, members, so 8:30 means your budget amendments, if they're still awaiting final approval, that would be 8 a.m. So if you have one back there, you know you're going to run, I would go sign off tonight. Or if you know you're going to pull it. You've all heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion carries. The House is adjourned until Friday, February 23rd at 8:30 a.m.